Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Welcome back, BFT, BFT Radio Network. Junior Nubian for John Canzano. If you missed the conversation with JC earlier today, go find the podcast, would you? He was able to break down all the action from Louisville, Kentucky last night. Breaking away from the Oregon-Virginia game from last night. We've been processing it all afternoon long, but we need some levity. We need some levity. We need some comedy up in here right now. And Jen Kirkman is in studio. She's joining us right now live on the BFT and the BFT Radio Network. She is in Portland. She's got some shows at the Helium Comedy Club. They are already underway. She's got a show that's already sold out for tomorrow night as well. But there are some tickets available for tonight, 7:30, 10 o'clock, and for 10 o'clock tomorrow night as well. It is Jen Kirkman in the house right now. Jen, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I know nothing about basketball, but I have a weird thing that I do with a friend of mine who loves sports.
What's that?
He'll go, tell me what's going on this season with the Lakers. And I'll go, okay. And I'll just make up a whole thing. And I'm usually kind of right. So can I try to do it with...
I love it.
Who's the college basketball team right now that's playing in Portland? Is it...
The Oregon Ducks. Yeah.
Oregon Ducks. Yeah. Okay. So I know nothing about them. People aren't going to... Well, if I do well, people won't believe me if I get it wrong. Okay. The Oregon Ducks. They're... Their main point guy, he's got an ankle problem, and it's really something that most people think is a bad thing, but it's actually starting to help because people are underestimating him, and he's like kind of faking a lot of people out, and they are going to do well. And is that any of that true?
You know, oddly, the ankle part is true. Yeah, Oregon does have a star player that had an ankle injury, but it wasn't a good thing.
Oh,
but
and it wasn't the main point guy, which isn't a...
It wasn't the main point guy, and they also lost, so the season ended last night.
Okay, well,
I think you were that close.
I got ankle right.
You got the ankle right, which is... I started looking around. I couldn't believe it. You're like,
but you know what?
It's incredible.
I think it's probably a safe bet that someone has an ankle problem playing basketball.
What's your favorite sport to watch? Say to go to attend. Would it be basketball? Would it be baseball, football?
I'm going to sound like the biggest weirdo, but to attend would be golf.
Really?
I love a golf. My dad's a greenskeeper and I grew up on a golf course. So I have learned to appreciate the excitement of a golf game. And I know it's like for rich bleepholes, but...
I'm listening.
But I truly... I look at it more from a Caddyshack working class perspective. Does that make sense?
I love it.
Yeah. So I kind of like the excitement of the quiet and then some idiot yells out, you know, something.
Get in the hole!
Yeah, while they're putting. But on TV, baseball probably is my favorite. I was a big Red Sox fan.
Really?
And then after they started winning the World Series, it was less... It's not fun for me to have the team be winning so much.
Why is that? Did you enjoy
it? It gets boring. I guess I was addicted to the drama. I didn't know this about myself, but once they started winning, I was like, I don't care. And then, you know, it's sort of like a sitcom where they just replace a character like Becky on Roseanne, and we're supposed to act like that was really the same person. So I don't like when the team leaves and then you have all new players.
Right.
And like some of them left for the Yankees, and I was like, but we're supposed to hate them. And people that know about sports would tell me like that they don't actually hate each other. And I was disappointed.
Favorite Red Sox of all time would be who?
I'm going to say Johnny Damon because he went to the Yankees. I know. And this is the heartbreak. But he invented the idiots.
That's right.
He came up with that beautiful Zen attitude of we're growing out our hair. We're not the corporate Yankees. Not that they're not. They're not like some independent team here. But, you know, and we're going to just play for the love of it. And that was really inspiring to me.
Did you ever get to go to games at Fenway or?
I mean, I did. I went once, but it just... I don't like big crowds where people are drunk and angry, which is
so you decided
dumb
to
that
do
I got. Yeah, that's why I got into comedy. Well, you know, that's a great point. They're usually less people.
Right.
Like it's not. I'm not playing Fenway Park. You know, Helium's a little smaller than Fenway, not by much.
No, not by much.
It's pretty much a stadium.
Fun little intimate setting, really.
Yeah, but I just get like I don't want to be there with all the crazy, you know, Boston fans are pretty intense.
Well, so before you came on, as we went into break, I made the point, my best friend's from Boston, and, you know, I know how annoying he can be, and a big sports fan. So we've gone and seen Patriot games, Celtic games. I mean, that's a different type of crowd. Do you get that sense even when you're performing there? And I know that's, you know, your hometown area, New England and all that. Is that just a different type of demographic, different type of crowd than you'd find anywhere else?
I don't think so. Just because my audience isn't quite like your Celtics fan or Patriots fan. I mean, they might like sports, but not in this hardcore. Where I experience crowds are similar to their sports team crowds is Philly. Mm. Like, they're way worse than Boston. But Boston, no. There's still, I get maybe more of the collegiate, I don't play sports, I'm in the theater kind of Boston crowds. But they're smarter. Like, Boston people are smarter, I think. Like smarter comedic minds, like it's hard to make them laugh. You got to be like two steps ahead of them, not just one step ahead.
See, that's always interesting to me. And we're talking to Jen Kirkman. She's got shows, Helium Comedy Club coming up, and you can find her website, jenkirkman.com as well here in Portland. That's interesting to me. How do you go about picking up on an audience's like comedic intellect? I mean, that could be probably an ambiguous, tough thing to explain, but you know, some crowds you can kind of vibe with them and be like, you know what, this is a sophisticated comedic audience.
Yeah.
Some crowds you're like, anything. I'll just throw it up against the wall and see what sticks, right?
Yeah, you can kind of tell when you walk out. Again, you're right. I have no idea how to explain it, but in one instant, you get the sense of the room as one big thing, and everyone in it would argue, now I'm my own person, but as a crowd, they're not.
Yeah.
And thank God, but you kind of have jokes you throw out at the beginning to test them. And it's not like, oh, anything I say is so smart. I mean, how loose are they? Maybe not politically correct, are they? And I don't mean anything like I'm offending people and being like, gays shouldn't have rights. I don't mean that. But I mean, like, are they able to, you know, I have a bit right now I'm doing about how smoking was the greatest thing ever. It should still be going on. And you only die from it if you think you can. It's dumb. And I don't smoke anymore. But if the crowd laughs at that, I know that they're just like, they get like irony and sarcasm. And if they're like, no, it's really bad for you, you know, then I'm like, oh, we've got to dial it down a little bit.
Now, and I would say like from a national perspective, a lot of people might be familiar with you appearing on Conan or Fallon or Corden or any of these late night, you know, primetime shows. Is that a little bit of a different feel when you're performing for, you know, a taped live TV audience than it is a normal stand-up scene?
There's like nothing worse because it's actually very easy because the crowd is so excited because they're at a TV taping and it's been really fun. The worst is when you go after like a very serious actor and then you have to pick the show back up, like make them laugh again. But usually it's very easy. They kind of laugh at anything, but the process of going through it is a torture. Like they, you know, like they have producers that just kind of overthink everything. And you're like, dude, I do these jokes in the clubs and everyone laughs. Like, it's going to be fine. Like, please don't. Be like, what if you said this? What if you said that? So I prefer when I go on stuff like that to just sit on the couch and banter. And that's, I like doing Conan because he lets me do that. Like, I don't really do a proper stand-up set.
Yeah.
And I ended up tap dancing on his desk once and he was super cool about it. My mom called me. She goes, I think he's mad at you, Jennifer. I worry about your career when you do these things. I'm like, Mom, I had to clear it with like 20 people. Like, they put a special top on his desk. That I could do it. Yeah.
Oh,
she was like, that's his desk. She acted like it was like his desk at home and I pushed his taxes off of it and started dancing. Like, I was like, it was a bit. And she goes, well, I don't know. I think he was playing along, but secretly might not have you back.
So do your parents like watch your stuff? Do they give you feedback? Do they call you up sometimes and be like, hey, saw this, you know, don't know how I feel about that.
No, they love it. Well, when I first started out and I imitated my mom, she didn't love it. But then once I got kind of successful, she loves it. And they come to my shows, like they will travel. They've driven to Vermont to see me. They've come to Vegas to see me. And they are little celebrities now. And I'll say my parents are here and the crowd goes crazy.
Nice.
They sign autographs after and take pictures. They go to comedy shows that I'm not performing in.
Wow.
Like they go all the time. And if they know the comic, they'll get backstage and they'll stand with them in their merch line and be like, do you know Jen Kirkman? I'm her parents. Like, they're crazy.
Was there ever a time though where you were like trying to work past being conscious about what you were,
yes,
what your material was, because you're like, oh man, I don't know if my parents see this, you know, will they take issue?
I used to have a bit, it's in my first Netflix special about, can I say masturbation?
Yes.
Okay.
You can.
Well, I was doing that bit live in front of my dad who was sitting front row and I was like, oh my God. And I was just like checking in with him, which was kind of making it funnier. And he was just like, I just go to another place in my mind, Jen. Keep going, keep going. Like, he was like, I got this. Don't worry about it. But yeah, it's very unnerving depending on the topic.
Yeah, see, because I have that, you know, to a lesser degree, right? But, you know, if I'm hosted on the air, I'm like, sometimes there's a thought that passes through my head. Oh, my mom and dad listening? Like, should I be careful about what I'm saying right now? I'm like, screw it. You got to push through. It's all about content, man.
That's right. And they want you to live your best life. And if it includes saying things that are maybe upsetting to them, well, you're your own person. And my parents are 80 now, so I'm like, I really can't keep worrying about what they think, you know?
I know, you know, anybody that's familiar with you and your routines and your content gets entertained by your stances on marriage and parenting and kids and all that. I was always enjoyed when you were talking about getting divorced and then dating a much younger gentleman.
Well, it was one date, to be clear. This was years ago, and I will never do that again.
You would not.
He was a cute, I mean, I think this is a rite of passage for anyone, man or woman, that you get divorced in your late 30s and you're like, you feel so young and free. You don't really think there's an age difference. You know, someone said, oh, this 23-year-old guy I know is in a band. Great. I'm cool. I'm 23, you know, at heart.
Right.
And then you hang out with him and he's fun. And then, yeah, he came back to my place and it's just like asking me things like, what was it like when Kurt Cobain died? Like, as though I was like, well, you remember? And he's like, no, I was, you know, three or something. And I'm like, oh, I feel so old. Like, he just, and he was like looking around my place and it was just a, you know, it's a lovely apartment, but it's not whatever, the Taj Mahal. And he was like, oh my God, you have like a wine cabinet. I was like, that's right. It's sometimes you have, you know, when you're older, you have things that cost $500. It's not crazy. And it was a wedding gift.
Right. What would your advice be to younger comics trying to break in now? Say, you know, they're coming up. It's what they want to do. I'm sure it's a cutthroat industry. You kind of have to be like all in to try to make it.
Yeah,
is that still accurate?
I think so. I mean, I started 23 years ago, so I would tell them, don't ask the old lady what to do. But because I'll always say, like, go on YouTube. That's my answer to everything. Like, can't you people go on YouTube?
That's right.
But I do think the good thing about comedy is it's never changed in all these years. And the only way to get good at it is to do it. So there's no advice anyone can give you where you go, oh, okay, so that's what made you bomb. So I just won't do that and I'll never bomb. It's about bombing and it's figuring out who you are in front of people, which sucks. So if you don't mind that or you can get through it, you'll probably be very successful. And just keep getting up as often as you can and don't worry about the other people that might be funnier than you. Everyone finds their place. A lot of my friends that I used to be intimidated by ended up not wanting to travel and perform. They became TV writers, so they're not my competition anymore. You know, like, just don't look at what anyone else is doing and don't listen to anyone's advice, really, except the kind of advice I'm giving, which is there's no advice. Yeah. You just have to do it.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. When there is is there an off season to comedy? I mean, you're
not really. I used to hear clubs like maybe summer's bad because people don't want to be inside at night. But I do little like tours in the summer and a lot of people appreciate it. Because some people don't have air conditioning. They like to go inside. So I don't think anymore there's an off season. Maybe Christmas, but that's about it. People go to comedy all the time. New Year's, Valentine's Day. I don't think so.
You're starting with Portland to kick off your spring tour from what I'm seeing here.
I think so. Well, no, I was just, I don't know, when does spring start? I was just all over in March, like Phoenix and whatnot. But yeah, I'm just doing a couple other places in April and May.
You're going to Pittsburgh and Philly.
Yeah.
Philly's going to be great, right? You were just mentioning that.
Yeah, my people there are great.
Will they boo bad comedy or do they?
How would I know?
It's never happened to me. First of all, yes.
No, they will. They will. I've done clubs there where it's like, they'll let you know.
Gosh. Because they just, from a sports angle, they just signed one of the best players in baseball.
Who is it? Would I know?
His name is Bryce Harper.
Oh, no. Okay.
He signed a contract for, what was it? $400 million.
Ooh.
And they booed him yesterday in his first game.
Because he's rich?
Because he's rich and he struck out, I think, his first at bat.
Yeah, there's
They're
no
like, boo!
That's what Boston and Philly share. Like, no sportsmanship whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just, like, you mess up, we hate you.
What do you like about performing in Portland?
I like that the audiences are like, they're kind people, but they're like silly. They'll laugh. It's like maybe because it's kind of a stoner city. Like they're nice, but they're not overly, you know, they're not overly sensitive. Like, I don't know. They've got good
like
values.
Like Seattle?
No, I don't think Seattle's sensitive. I'm thinking like San Francisco used to be like, if you were saying even in the setup of your joke, like, so Bush is president, boo. I'm like, yeah, I got it. You don't like George Bush, but can I get to the point? You know,
right.
Portland has the same political, like liberal values, but I think they can take a joke a little bit more. And it's probably because they're stoned.
That's true.
Or they just had a good donut.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's wonderful donuts to be had here. Jen Kirkman, jenkirkman.com. Follow her on Twitter, @JenKirkman. What do you have available for the rest of the weekend? Yeah, I mean, I'm looking, and it looks like everything's just about darn sold out. So I don't know.
Well, it's getting close for the early show, so I would just buy those tickets right now, folks. Yeah. At your desk, get out that credit card. It's payday. Let's do it. But then the late shows, there will be tickets because my people are not a late night people. So there'll
be room.
How cool
would it be to have people? I would love to have people.
What, I know.
That's
like
a badass thing to say. My people.
Man. I mean, it's really an obnoxious thing to say. Like, Martin Luther King. My people. they're just fun. But I think people who like my comedy are kind of like me. They're either old or old souls. Like, they just like to be in bed by 10. So do I. I might bring a bed out on stage and just lay in it and do the 10 o'clock shows. Can we get that going? I'm looking at Nick, who runs Helium. Let's get that going. I'm tired.
Get that in the contract. You know, for someone, I wake up at like 4:30 every morning to come into
God
work.
Bless
so
you.
That 10 p.m. bedtime looks nice and tasty right now. I'll come to that show just to...
You gotta go to bed at 8.
Well, normally. But I got a basketball game to cover tonight. And then but Saturday night, that sounds like fun. Be at that 10
p.m.
show.
Yeah, come on down.
That'll be a lot of fun. All right, Jen Kirkman, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Shout out Nick. Setting that up as always. All right, we'll be back. Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, joins us as well. And you at 503-417-7575 on the Bald-Faced Truth. Big thanks to Jen Kirkman joining us in studio. That was a lot of fun. Bring a little levity to a Friday. Love talking comedy. I'm really interested in kind of the art and science of stand-up comedy. And, you know, I'm one of those guys, like, part of me wants to watch as much comedy as possible, but I'm also like an old faithful, meaning I find something that I like, whether it's a show, whether it's an act, or a particular host or comedian, and I will be loyal to that. So, for me, that's Michael Schur and Aaron Sorkin. Pretty much those two guys, I will watch basically anything they do. Tina Fey is in there too. But stand-up comedy is just hard, man. It is hard to break through, and it's hard to be successful, and to be successful over a sustained amount of time, keep things fresh, keep things interesting, keep things funny for multiple demographics, multiple generations. Not easy. Not easy. And in another life, I would like to think that I'd be a stand-up comic. I was talking to Jen on our way out, though, and she's like, oh, have you ever dabbled in comedy? And I'm like, well, first of all, huge compliment just to even bring that up. Secondly, and my girlfriend will laugh at this, but I was like, I feel like I say humorous stuff all the time. And like half of it she thinks is actually funny, and the other half she thinks is funny because I think it's funny. And it's not really all that funny. So it's kind of hard for me to judge if I'm actually funny or not. So maybe I need to pull a Fritzy on the DP show and start getting like my own stand-up acts together through people I don't know, come up with my own material and try it out. But part of me wonders if it won't be a spectacular failure as well. So maybe I'll hold off on that. It's a good thought, though. It's a good thought. And I will not pose the question to the listening audience, do you think I'm funny? I won't do it. I won't just come on the radio and ask you if you would give me your opinion. And I won't ask you to tweet at Judah Newby. I won't ask you to call at 503-417-75. And I won't ask you to tell me if you think that I am funny. I won't do it. That's not what I am going to try to do here. I'm not looking for validation. I'm not looking for your opinion. I'm not looking for any type of feedback. So please do not let me know. Yeah, I'll just stick to sports. Maybe that's why everybody says stick to sports. Matt Preem will join us from 24/7 Sports. We're going to go ahead and move that, though, to the 2 o'clock hour. 2 o'clock, Matt Preem will be joining us from Louisville. He's still there. He's still sticking around and taking in the regional final, Purdue and Virginia. I like Purdue in that matchup only because Virginia, I don't think, is going to be able to keep up with Purdue's outside shooting. And look, I said it on yesterday's show, and I felt like it was validated in the game last night that Oregon would either shoot 40% from downtown and win the game, or they would fail to get to that mark and then lose the game. They end up finishing at 37%, and they lost the game by 4 points. I looked at that box score and the way that that game unfolded, seeing the last couple of three-point attempts that they had while the game was still close and to be decided in the last few minutes of the game. And Oregon missed their key three-pointers in the last 4 minutes.
Over on the left wing, Amin with it. 10 to shoot inside of 2 minutes to go. Pritchard, long triple, is short from straight on. It hit the front of the rim, and Virginia rebounded it.
Boy, I think the best way to describe that was grazed the rim, barely.
Right, it barely got the rim. Pritchard's deep three. He went 1 for 6 from downtown. And then Lewis King on the next possession with Oregon down three again.
Teardrop up, short off the front of the iron. Rebound comes down to Oregon's Pritchard. He pushes. It's a 3-on-3. Kicks to the wing. King for three to tie, and he airballed it. He airballed the three, and Virginia grabs it with 1:10 to go.
Well, King is claiming that guy for Virginia hit him on the arm. That's why it was short.
And whether or not, you know, I didn't see clear contact on that, but he definitely put a lot of arc underneath that three-point shot and it ended up coming up short. And ultimately, it's just a couple of made threes away from Oregon winning that basketball game. Nick Cody chiming in on Twitter as well, giving some clarity. Virginia guarding the pick and roll. The thing is, man, if you know exactly what an offense likes to do offensively, you can diagnose it, and then you have the personnel to take it away, and you have the coach to implement a defensive tactic to take it away. You're going to put your opposition at a disadvantage. That's exactly what Tony Bennett did yesterday, guarding the pick and roll. They had guys switching. They had guys hedging. I mean, they were pressuring Pritchard every time that Pritchard was dribble and he'd get the screen from Okoro or most notably Wooten. How many times have we seen Pritchard be able to exploit that and find the weak point in the defensive rotation or lack thereof and be able to get the alley-oop off clean to Wooten? But Virginia didn't allow that. They just did not allow that. They said, basically, look, we're going to pressure you. The ball handler, which is 90% of the time Pritchard, coming around a screen. We're going to stay disciplined. We're going to keep to our marks. We're going to stay with the roll man Wooten all the way to the basket. And we are going to pressure you all the way 3 and 4 feet past the three-point arc. And that basically takes any type of over-the-top pass out of the equation. In fact, the only other opportunity, other than the one alley-oop to Wooten that Oregon did have, was Paul White driving to the basket. He had a chance to find Wooten on an alley-oop, and instead he didn't see him, though, because he's not used to that kind of a drive penetration and toss up into the air, and this happened instead.
And Lewis King is limping a little bit, favoring something in his left leg, but he's staying out there at least for the time being. White drives, spins, goes to the basket, swatted by Diakite. He pinned it against the glass and then corralled it.
Well, he blocks the shot, pins it against the glass, which then keeps it into play, and then he just brings it down. So he gets a block and a rebound.
Virginia was just too savvy and too athletic on defense, and all the while, Oregon is just a couple of shots away from beating those guys, man. Oregon was good enough to be in the Elite Eight this year, and I think that just validates the job that Dana Altman did with this team. They evolved. They started trusting each other. They started hitting a ceiling that I don't think anybody thought that they had. Definitely not in January or February, but they ended up finding it. As far as what does that mean for next season? Well, next season's next season. You got to compartmentalize the two, but you can't help but wonder, what does Oregon have coming back? And Matt Preem will shed more light on this in the 2 o'clock hour. He'll join us at 2 o'clock. What does Oregon have coming back? What are the decisions facing Lewis King going into the NBA? Is he NBA ready? Did he play well enough in the last 4 or 5 games, or even in the last couple of months, really, to warrant NBA consideration, to warrant first-round consideration? This draft class, obviously, more loaded with talent than last year's draft class was. That saw Troy Brown go in the middle of the first round. Lewis King's better than Troy Brown. You booked that, you know, especially offensively. You know, if he decides to come back, which I think he should seriously consider, you're talking about another Oregon team that could be loaded for next year. And you never know what kind of recruits they could sign again. Greg Anthony's kid. Maybe. We had John Canzano on earlier, and we were going back and forth about the one-and-done philosophy, the approach. Is it valid? Is it wise? Is it savvy? Is it necessary? And I argue it's necessary. I argue a little bit of one-and-done talent is necessary. You mix it in with some veteran grad transfers. You mix it in with some international talent. You mix it in with homegrown guys. And that's how you find yourself a team. And that's what this Oregon team was. And to me, that mix of talent is what makes, is what can make teams special. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, subscribing to the one and done philosophy exclusively is foolish. And I'm not sure I would disagree with that if you're Oregon, unless you are a blue blood. And don't get me wrong, Oregon is a national contender that matters, but they're not a blue blood. And I'm not sure they'll ever be a quote unquote blue blood. But they've got the ability to get one and dones every now and then. And by one and dones, I only mean players talented enough to qualify in the consideration of being one and dones, like King and Bull especially. But I don't think they can rely on that exclusively, and I don't think they did this year, of course, and they won't next year. But you need a little bit of that top flight talent. Sometimes you just need guys that are dope at basketball in order to win games big. But you need to get them to work together with your homegrown guys. I think the homegrown guys are more valuable to your program than a top flight, one and done talent, than McDonald's All-Americans. I think they're more valuable, they're more integral, and they help you in recruiting probably a little bit more sustainably. But I do think you need some of the top flight talent as well. 503-417-7575. What was your takeaway from the Oregon Ducks season? Bob's out in Hillsboro. Hey, Bob.
I just want to say the Ducks, would never floundering and looked like garbage this season. None of us ever thought they would have made it to the NCAA tournament. I mean, the ship was sinking. And Altman, to his credit, he found a way to turn things around. They win 10 in a row. They get to the NCAA. A salute to Altman. He's a great coach, regardless what Buchanan says.
Yep.
They got their own situation in Corvallis with Tinkle. But I'll just say this. The only thing I questioned last night in the game, why not try Victor Bailey? You go with just a 7-deep, rotation last night. I just didn't quite grasp that. I'm not a coach. I know Dana Altman knows what he's doing. But I thought they could have used Victor Bailey last night. He would have been quicker on the defense. Lewis King was struggling to go through those picks and screens. He couldn't get to the guy quick enough, Jerome, the shooter for Virginia, and I just thought, why won't he put Victor Bailey in? That's the only thing I questioned. Other than that, the Ducks had a great season. They got nothing to hang their head down about.
Bob, appreciate the phone call. Look, Victor Bailey also can shoot the three, so you're talking about a couple of threes away. I had the same concern. I was like, man, Lewis King, he's so visibly limited in terms of his mobility. At what point do you just take him out of the game completely? I think it's a fair question and concern, but even then, you end up making 9 three-pointers as a team, and Lewis King made 4 of them. And he's still 6'9", with a ridiculous wingspan that Victor Bailey just does not have. And you talk of Virginia, you mentioned their three-point shooter, and he even said after the game, Oregon's length is what took us out of rhythm. Ty Jerome said this. He said, Oregon's length is what took us out of rhythm. So even though Bailey moves better than King, I mean, King is just more long and could guard more positions even with a bad bum ankle. I think it's a tough decision because I think the concern is valid and warranted. At what point does King become a detriment? But at the same time, you're talking about a guy that went 4-for-8 from three and, made half your three-point baskets as a team. But ultimately, the Ducks shoot 37% beyond the arc. They lose by 4 points. They get smashed on the glass, but you could almost expect that. Wooten was a non-factor, and I anticipated that being the case because of the philosophy of the pack line. But it would have been nice to see him, you know, maybe get a couple. And, you know, going back and forth, Nick Cody mentioned this too. Guy sets up, asks for the ball in the post. He gets the ball in the post, kicks it out and resets, gets the ball again, but it's a worse shot. You know, Oregon did seem to be out of their rhythm offensively. To no surprise, best defense in the country. It's like, what do we think was going to happen? I said yesterday, I say there's a version of this game that does not see the Ducks get to 50 points. And that's what happened. They fought their tails off, though. They fought their tails off. But it does go to show you, you don't have to be a sexy offense to be one of the best teams in college basketball. Virginia's definitely not sexy on offense, but they are darn messy on defense. They are beautifully messy on defense. And Tony Bennett's got this squad back in the Elite Eight, and they're trying to get it back to the Final Four for the first time since the 80s and the Ralph Sampson era. All right, more BFT coming up, and then Matt Prehm will join us in the final.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.